Welcome to another week here at our services held at Bryce Canyon. And as we continue on with this journey in the parables of Jesus, what we are doing each week is examining a different parable, a different story-based teaching of Jesus. And what we're doing with those is we're examining them, seeing what he has to say. And we're doing that by unfolding what does the story say first? We want to examine the story. We want to see, okay, well, if a parable is him using a story, something that would feel like just relaying the kind of thing that you heard about your buddy at work, relaying what you heard happen to your neighbor. We're looking at this story and trying to break down the story. What do we find just within the story before we do any kind of bringing that around to a spiritual kind of interpretation? Before we do any kind of application into our own life, we're looking at this parable and we're going to try to understand what is the story in and of itself saying. And then from there, what we'll do with it is we'll be able to take that story and we'll be able to identify, okay, well, now that I understand what's happening in the story, where does that fit in with the rest of Scripture? What else can we see within the teachings of Jesus, within the message of the apostles, within the message that we find beforehand in the Old Testament? How does this fit in with that? And what do I do with it from there as to apply it to my own life? How does this all come together? It's been a joy so far to look at these stories. And one thing that we've seen as we kind of understand about these parables is that sometimes when Jesus is doing this, he's sharing a story directly with his followers, and sometimes just directly with his closest followers, his 12 apostles. Sometimes it's the larger group of people that would be following him around and listening to his teaching. Sometimes it's some massive crowds where there is many people, some who have never heard him before, that are coming in. And yet even still, sometimes it's almost directed intentionally at an opponent of Jesus. And the people who are gathered to listen to him, some of them have rightly ears to hear and eyes to see what Jesus is sharing. This does illuminate to them very clearly and presently what it is they're to take. And for some of them, they're hard of heart and they turn from this. And in some ways, the truth is almost covered from them because they will not hear and will not listen. So our prayer today is that we have ears to hear and eyes to see, that we can take from the parable of Jesus and we can see rightly what he has to say and then apply that to our life. So today where we'll find, if you'd like to turn yourselves there, we're in Matthew chapter 18, and we're going to be looking at verses 21 on through the end of the chapter in verse 35. This is the parable of the unforgiving servant. And today, I don't believe that we have, even with all that prelude said, I don't believe that we have too challenging of a parable to see what is the purpose of this and how to apply it to our life. But I do want us to go through this as we go through this kind of verse by verse and as we consider the whole of it. I want us to see the reflection of who we might be and who we're called to be. I want us to really look at our life and consider, who am I in this story? Am I this guy that is going to be unforgiving and is going to graciously receive forgiveness on one end and then turn around and never give it out on the other? The idea in all of this today is ultimately going to zone in on the notion of forgiveness. And I think that if we're honest with ourselves, there are times that we're quicker to forgive than others. I think if we're honest with ourselves, there are situations in which we are very ready to ask and receive forgiveness, even if that situation where we are the one that we would find ourselves needing to give the forgiveness, we wouldn't be so quick to. And that's where we find our gentleman today. So before I go any further down that line of thinking, allow me to read verses 21 to 35 here in Matthew 18. And then we'll begin to consider that together, both just what do we see in the story, what's happening in the story, and then the application and interpretation of that for our very own lives. So Matthew 18, beginning in verse 21, it reads, "Then Peter came up and said to him, 'Lord, how often will my brother sin against me? And I forgive him, as many as seven times?' Jesus said to him, 'I do not say to you seven times, but 77 times. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts with his servants. When he began to settle, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. And since he could not pay, his master ordered him to be sold with his wife and children and all that he had, and payment to be made. So the servant fell on his knees, imploring him, "Have patience with me, and I will pay you everything." And out of pity for him, the master of that servant released him and forgave him the debt. But when that same servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. And seizing him, he began to choke him, saying, "Pay what you owe." So his fellow servant fell down and pleaded with him, "Have patience with me, and I will pay you." He refused and went and put him in prison until he should pay the debt. When his fellow servants saw what had taken place, they were greatly distressed, and they went and reported it to their master, all that had taken place. Then his master summoned him and said to him, "You wicked servant, I forgave you all that debt because you pleaded with me. And should not you have had mercy on your fellow servant as I had mercy on you?" And in anger, his master delivered him to the jailers until he should pay all his debt. So also my heavenly Father will do to every one of you if you do not forgive your brother from your heart. So this is our parable for today. Again, let's start by just examining what is happening in the story itself. Then we'll get back to the full picture of our passage and its interpretation, and then its application into our life. So in the story, we see beginning in verse 23 that there's this comparison being made to the kingdom of heaven as to this king of his own land. With these parables, what we've seen over the several past weeks is that the kingdom of heaven is this relation that Jesus is also making. He's trying to draw towards salvation, these ideas of salvation. He's trying to draw towards what within salvation, the people who become the kingdom of heaven, how might their lives be lived. And so he's comparing that to a king of his own kingdom. Jesus is that king, and now we have a king here in our story of his own kingdom. With that in mind, this king has a debt account that he wishes to settle with many servants. It's not just one. One of these servants is brought in front of him in verse 24. So we've got a king who has debts that are held to him by many servants, and he's desiring to bring these accounts to settle. One of the servants owes him 10,000 talents. A talent would be really one day's worth of wage. He owes him 10,000 days worth of wages. And this man, he can't pay up. Typically, I mean, not always, but typically, if you owe 10,000 days worth of wages and you are merely but a day wage kind of servant, odds are that's not just sitting around in your couch cushions to pull it out. So almost of course he can't pay up. And so here's how the master responds. Okay, well, he's going to be sold. His wife and his children are going to go into debting slavery, and payment is going to be made. We're going to start recouping a little bit of that, because clearly you can't be trusted to pay back. You've got over a decade's worth of owing already on the table. Of course we're not going to trust you to pay back. And so here he is, ready to sell the man and his family into debting slavery. We're ready to have payment be sort of taken back. And as that's about to happen, the servant falls on his knees and begs him, implores him, "Please, master, have patience with me, and I will pay you everything." He insists, "Look, just a little more time." The man's not even asking for what he receives, just a little more time. Allow me to repay this lifetime of debt. Let me work hard. Just don't sell me. Don't sell my family into this debting slavery, please. As he implores, as he begs him, the master finds pity for him. You know what the master says? He says, "You know what? Not only am I going to hear your request and have patience with you, your debt is free. You are released from it." The man doesn't even need to pay back a single talent of the 10,000. He's entirely free. What grace! Truly the definition of grace. Everything here is unmerited. This man has done nothing to deserve that kind of freedom and forgiveness. And yet he's given it. And what does he do with it? Does he do a heel click on the way out, running out in joy and proclaiming the goodness of the king and telling everyone who would listen what a great thing has been done for him and spreading forward this joy? No. No, immediately. The story leaves us no room for any kind of celebration of that. No, immediately. But when that servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. And seizing him, he began to choke him, saying, "Pay we what you owe." He finds a man who owes him 1/100th of what he owed his king master and demands that he get that back, choking him. Not even going and asking him, but seizing him and choking him, "Pay me what you owe." That's how he responds to the grace he was given. It says his fellow servant fell down and pleaded with him, "Have patience with me and I will pay you." Not even hearing the very same words that he just declared to the king brings any kind of pity into his heart. No, he demands, he refuses, and he puts this man in prison. In verse 30 it says, "And when the fellow servants saw all of this, they were distressed, and rightly so. Even if the fellow servants hadn't known anything about what had happened to this man beforehand and him being released of his debt, they see this, that this man comes out, seizes him, chokes him, has no pity, and puts him in jail. And of course they're disturbed. And they go to the king and they say, "Look, this is what's happened, all that's taken place." And the master summons him back and declares that he is a wicked servant. "I forgave you all the debt because you pleaded with me. Should not you have mercy on your fellow servant as I had mercy on you?" And out of his anger with this wicked servant, the king delivers him over to the jailers until his near lifetime of debt would be repaid. As we read this story, we can understand what's happening. There's a king. He's owed a debt. He has a servant who owes him 10,000 days worth of wages. And he's ready to sell that man to just recoup a little bit of his losses. The man begs him, "Please, have pity, give me patience." The king frees that man from his debt. And that servant who was just freed of his debt immediately went out and found someone who owed him 1/100th of what he owed the king. And that man seizes the servant and chokes him and demands his money. And when he is asked for pity and patience, he gives none to the man who owed him, instead putting him in jail. And so when the king hears word of this, he summons back his servant who he freed of the debt, places the debt back on him, declares him to be wicked, and hands him over to the jailers until the debt would be repaid. That's what's happening within our story. And again, certainly as we began to set up in verse 21, back before he gets into the parable, we can understand what Peter was asking and how this applies. If we go back to verse 21, what we'll see is Peter comes to Jesus and asks, "How often will my brother sin against me and I must forgive him? As many as 7 times? He goes to this concept of completion. He goes to a fullness of forgiveness. And Jesus says, "I do not say to you 7 times, but 77 times. Or in some translations, we might read 70 times 7 times. That there is this absolute overabundance of forgiveness that Peter is called to give. And then we see this story. So as we're beginning to understand the interpretation of this, we can see, okay, well, what Jesus is declaring is that within the kingdom of heaven, there are debts that are had. There are things that are owed. Judgment that should be passed rightly. There's also forgiveness and mercy and grace. And so how often does the Christian forgive? He forgives in an overwhelming, abundant amount. And so as we are considering first some of the interpretation of the story, we see the call to forgiveness. Now let us consider the characters within this story. And where do we find ourselves as we begin to analyze this passage? Well, we have the King of the kingdom. And as I said previously, I think we can rightly attribute this to being Christ, that he is the King of the kingdom of heaven. And that the greatest debt ultimately is owed towards him, a lifetime of debt, an insurmountable amount of debt, the debt that comes from our sin. So when we read this passage, we ought not to see ourselves as the king. Our second character here is the servant who was owing this 10,000 talents that was forgiven by the king, and who then goes out and offers no forgiveness. And the third character we see in this story is the one who has gone and asked for forgiveness by this wicked servant. If there's anyone in this story who we most often ought to see ourselves in the position of, it is the first servant. We owe the king an insurmountable lifetime debt because of our sin. He would rightly be able to judge us and say, you owe me life. You owe me everything that you have and more. More than you could ever come back up with to repay me. And also, I have with great unmerited favor given you grace and forgiveness. You are free of this debt by nature of being my servant. And coming to me and asking me to forgive you of it. Asking me for patience and pity. Yes. Be my servant. Have my forgiveness. And then go and live in light of that. The question for us is then to decide, how are we going to respond? We are most certainly the one that comes before the king with that kind of debt. Once we have been forgiven, how do we respond? What do we do from there? Do we go out into the world? And when we find the one who's going to owe us, because be assured, as we can all know and consider from our own lives, there are times that people are going to come to us and they have wronged us and they're going to ask for forgiveness. It might be an actual financial situation. It might just be something that has to do with relationship. But we most certainly will be then in the position of the one who has something owed to us on a much smaller scale than a holy and righteous God who has been sinned against. 1 to 100th aspect that we see here in this parable. So when that moment comes, will we find ourselves continuing to be just like the wicked servant here? Or will we live into what this wicked servant should have done? What the king, when he calls him back into his court, says he should have done? What we see in verse 33, where it says, "And should not you have had mercy on your fellow servant as I had mercy on you?" Verse 35, how this passage closes and the call that Jesus gives, bringing it back around to Peter's initial question. Jesus says in verse 35, "So also my heavenly Father will do to every one of you if you do not forgive your brother from the heart." And so we see in this story, who is each character? We see where we ought to see ourselves. And we see the application we ought to take into our own life. That we owe this great debt. As a believer, we have been forgiven of this insurmountable debt. And now we go into life ready to forgive. So let us, with this last bit of time remaining, consider forgiveness. Consider what it is to forgive. How does that look like in the context of being a believer? Well, the very first thing is that we have received and we ought to give. Here's the easiest part for us to establish based on just this passage alone. There is no room for unforgiveness, Christian. There is no room for us to say, I will not forgive this. There is no debt in our life. There is nothing that happens in our life that we are able to look at and say, this is greater than the sin that I have brought before God. We don't like it. We don't feel it all the time, but the reality is the things that are levied against us, the debt that is owed to us, is more often than not 1/100th of what we owe to God. And there is so little cause so often for us to step back and say, I was entirely holy and righteous, and you just merely brought wrong to me. No, more often than not, the situation is that we were involved in some kind of wrong too that led to another wrong. And though theirs may have been greater, there may be still just cause for us to feel wronged. We are imperfect people that often play a part in some way towards what was wronged against us. So how much more cause then does that not give for us to offer forgiveness? There is no place in the Christian life for us to be unforgiving. It is not always easy to hear. It is even harder to live out. But as the believer, we are ready to forgive immediately. That is our call. As we have been forgiven, so we forgive. As we have been loved, so we love. How can we look at the cross and know what that meant and know what was taken on for us and then turn around and say, yeah, but I won't do that. I won't. You don't understand, Jacob. You don't know what they did to me. Well, the reality is what I've seen play out in life is that some of the worst things imaginable have happened to people. And I've watched faithful believers step into those situations and be ready to forgive. One of the most powerful stories that has really lived with me for nearly the entirety of my life is the story of one of the pastors of the church that I grew up in. His name is Philip, and his father was murdered. That one's hard to forgive, huh? And yet, what Philip did was go and meet the man who murdered his father in jail. And not once just to say a brief, I forgive you, and this is hard, and then go and never return to see the man again. No, he kept returning. He formed a relationship with the man and shared the gospel with the man and watched this man's life change. So what do we have that is harder in our life than watching our father be murdered and going to befriend the man and share the gospel with him? That is Christian forgiveness. That man's life was changed. So many who know the story of Philip's life, like me, was changed because of that. It's one of the very first things that I think of every time that I find myself in a place where I'm finding it hard to forgive. If another man, not even Jesus, that alone should be enough, but if another man who is no different than me, fully man, only man, not fully man, fully God, can bring that level of forgiveness into his life, why can I not? Again, one more time, Christian, forgiveness must be a part of our practice in life. There is no excuse for it to be. Now, as we consider forgiveness, what does that look like? I often will kind of break down this process into say that there is forgiveness, there is reconciliation, and there is restoration. And that forgiveness is merely the first step of that. I do believe that as a Christian, that we are called to play out all three of those steps. And that if it's two Christians who have brought a harm to one another, then we are both called to live into all three of those steps. And we have no ground truly to not live that out as a Christian. The reality is, though, that sometimes the person who has wronged us and the person in whom we have a fractured relationship with isn't a believer. And so sometimes all that we really can do is like all of step one and a half. And step one, again, is this concept of forgiveness. Think of forgiveness like a gift. It's in your hands. You have extended it out, and it is ready to be received. Now, for someone to receive that forgiveness, they've got to come to you and ask for it. You can't even get to the step of being and fully forgiving someone until they come and ask for forgiveness. But you should have the gift in your hand, wrapped and presented and ready to give as soon as they ask it. And that part's on you. That part is on you and you alone. Let's say the Lord as well, through the Spirit moving you towards forgiveness. But that is on you, having wrapped that gift up and being in your hands and ready to present it. That you've considered what they've done. You've considered what Christ has done. You've considered how to live out a Christ-like life. And that part of that is forgiveness. And so you've swallowed all the hurt. You're living in it. But you've put it behind you and said, it is greater for me to live a gospel life and be ready to present forgiveness than it is for me to stand here in my wounds and offer unforgiveness. I know what I'm called to. And so you have that forgiveness in your hands, ready, that when they would come to you and say, please forgive me. Please cancel this debt. Do not hold this against me any longer, but cancel this debt. That's in your hands for you to say, yes, I'm ready. Here it is. Here is my forgiveness. Here is the cancellation of debt in our relationship. That then leads to reconciliation. And now we're beginning to talk about a bridge where there's two people who are moving back together. Two people who are ready to say, yes, there was a fracture in this relationship. I've now canceled the debt between us. And now we're going to build this bridge back together so that we might rejoin in relationship. The obstacle is gone, and now the relationship is being brought back into relationship. This is the part where it's a two-way street. You, as the believer, are ready to say, I've canceled the debt, and I'm ready to move forward into relationship with you. And so you're ready to take those steps forward. But again, this part is a two-way street. If somebody else is simply seeking for forgiveness, but then going to move on, your obligation is to be ready to live into that. Just like your obligation is to be ready to forgive when it's asked. If you are able to move forward in reconciliation, if you are able to say, yes, I desire to be in relationship with you, to show you a love even after this hurt has happened. And they're saying, yes, I'm ready to have a relationship with you, even in light of what I've done. I'm so grateful for the forgiveness that you've given me, and we're going to bring this thing back together. Then excellent, let's do that. Which leads us to the restoration and the rebuilding of what was there. We've forgiven, we've reconciled, and now in this new relationship that's forming, we're bringing it back together. And this is where we have a measure of, well, maybe questions around, well, what does that look like? The restoration may not be that you're building back the exact same building in the exact same way, but you are building back in relationship. As an example, perhaps you have a family member or a friend who stole an incredible amount of money from you or an incredible amount of wealth in physical goods from you. In the process of this, when they come to you and say, hey, I've wronged you. I stole from you. Please forgive me. You forgive them. And when they say, look, I really do desire to still be your friend. I really do desire to have a relationship with you, family member. You say, yes, let's have one. You aren't just canceled in your debts, but I'm kicking you out of my life. No, let's bring this thing back together. But then when we get to the restoration phase, it may not mean that this friend or this family member who had access to all of these goods unattended is just immediately handed that back over to. That's the aspect where wisdom still comes into play. It doesn't mean that you just give a green card to them to go ahead and abuse you in any which way they've already done, and you just hope it works out. No, it might look that your restored relationship is a little different, but you are building one back up, even in context of what has happened. The gospel is the focus. That light of forgiveness is shining on it. You are moving forward in a positive direction, but you're also doing that wisely. So don't hear me say that in those types of circumstances or any other kind of circumstance where a harm was done and you ought to be wise and cautious to see how this relationship is being restored over time. Yes, be wise. But move forward. Move forward. In some ways, it's really no different. The way that things were in the garden are not the way things are now. But we're moving forward to a better future, friends. We're going forward to the complete glory of what Christ has upon his second return. And that relationship between us has been forgiven, has been reconciled, and is being restored to the fullness of what he has in store, moving to a brighter and a better future. And so I encourage us that, again, our call as the believer is to live in the very same kind of light. That when that 1/100th debt of what we owe to the Lord is owed to us, that we reflect his grace and we reflect his love. And we see there is nothing in this world that cannot be overcome by that. And there is nothing in this world that we can hold against. Consider Matthew 18. Consider the wicked servant and know that we are him. At least in the first half of the story, but we don't have to be him in the back half. That we can display Christ's love and his forgiveness on the world. That we can do something radical. Not what's easy, not what is the worldly sense of right and wrong, not what the world would tell you to do, but what the Lord, our God, is calling us to. What he, through his Spirit, will strengthen us to do. What will advance his kingdom and display his glory to the world by being able to be forgiving people. What a powerful parable. What a teaching that we can see. How clear that this one is for us to identify the very easy wrong that we ought not to play out in our life. Read this story. Consider the way that you felt towards this wicked servant when he immediately leaves and chokes out the one who owes him. Consider what the king calls this servant, a wicked servant. Which of us, as servants of Christ, would desire to be called wicked? As I end, I would just also implore you that in some ways this message is speaking to the Christian about Christian life, but if that is not you, if you are not a servant in the kingdom, but as you hear this, you hear, well, I owe a debt that could really never be paid back under my own efforts. Know that forgiveness is offered to you. Come before our King. Call him to patience and pity and forgiveness for the debt that you owe him. And know that he is a good and gracious King ready to forgive you. And as you hear this and you consider, man, it would be good to live a life within a community where the implicit command is to forgive, that I know that I'm going to hurt somebody else at some point in time. I know that I'm going to wrong somebody else at some point in time. And it would be nice to know that forgiveness could be around the corner. That I won't be indebted to them forever. I won't be grudged against forever. But that we can work together to reconcile and restore out of a place of forgiveness. This is the kingdom of heaven. And though we are fallible people who are not always living up to the standard at which we are called, it is still within this organization of the body of the church. It is still within the kingdom of heaven in which we find that this is the standard. This is what we're called to, and this is what people are pursuing. And so I would urge you, again, to come before the King. Fall before him and call out in patience and for patience and pity and forgiveness. Know that he is good to forgive, and then to go forward and live a life within a community of forgiveness. That it is a joyful thing. It is a hopeful thing. It is a grand and a glorious thing. It might be a hard thing sometimes. It might be the thing that is not right on our first thoughts sometimes. It may be a thing that we have to pray for the strength of the Spirit to move us in sometimes. But the Spirit will provide that. That we are able to do that, able to follow in God's will, able to live a life that displays the great and glorious gospel. If only you would come and step into that. Let us pray.